Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Always pleased to have her come by and visit with us, and she seems to enjoy it too because she comes back when we ask her. Thanks for coming back, by the way, Lisa.
Thanks for asking me.
You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, and you can email us your garden question as well at talk@wpr.org. Lisa, what kind of questions are you getting these days in the office? Are you getting many or...
Yeah, we've been getting quite a few from the Madison, Middleton, Sun Prairie, you know, central southern Wisconsin about the gypsy moth.
Oh.
That's been a big problem in our area last year and is likely to be a big problem, too, this spring if we don't get cool, wet spring weather. If we get warm, dry spring weather, we're likely to have another bumper crop.
Yeah.
And there are people that are still calling about the Japanese beetles from last year and that sort of thing.
So there's always something to talk about, isn't there?
Oh, yes. And I'm sure we'll have a bumper crop of snow mold this year, too, with all of our...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's going to be lots of... And it almost does look a little bit like snow, doesn't it? It's kind of whitish on the lawn.
Yeah, right.
Little white patches here and there.
Or pinkish.
Or pinkish, and sometimes practically the whole lawn.
Oh, I hope not.
I'm on a committee, a board for the golf course, the University Ridge Golf Course.
Oh.
And they have the golf courses have a treatment program that they do to protect against snow mold. And the fellow who runs the golf course had some slides at our last meeting showing a couple of places where they didn't put that on. You know, this was in past years.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was all snow mold.
Pretty fuzzy.
Pretty fuzzy. Bob in Eau Claire has a question or comment. Let's go to Bob. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Larry, and good morning, guest.
Hi.
Happy Leap Day.
Yeah, that's right. Happy Leap Day to you.
Yeah. Hey, I was watching my other favorite channel, the Weather Channel, the only channel that I watch other than listening to WPR or PBS in Wisconsin, and I saw a product advertised called an Aqua Globe. And it looks sort of like a Christmas tree decoration. It has
or a turkey baster kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've seen them, and basically they said you fill the globe and then you pop it in upside down so that the opening slowly releases the water into your indoor plants. And I'm curious, is that an okay way to continually water your plants?
I don't have a whole lot of faith in it. It's going to depend on, for one thing, what size your pot is, whether that does a good job of totally watering the whole space. I could see it. You know, it'll let out whatever volume is in this very nice looking blown glass globe. But, you know, depending on the pot size, you might not be putting in enough water. You might be putting in too much water. I would just rather you have the good old watering can, fill up the pot to the brim, let it soak in, see whether it's come through. If it hasn't come through, you put in a little bit more water until it just starts to come through. You don't want your plant sitting in water. But you want to make sure that you got all the way through the volume of soil.
Now, I suppose if you're leaving for a week or two and you don't have anyone to come in and take care of your plants, be probably worth a try.
Well, the thing is that, you know, they're pretty small. They're about the size of a softball, I guess, maybe a little bit smaller.
Little, it's more like a baseball, I think.
Yeah, and it because of the size of the aperture, which is very small.
Right.
It'll drip out slowly. I guess if you had a small enough pot, it might make sense to do that. But again, it's really going to be dependent on the size of the plant and how much water it needs.
Okay.
Because different species are going to need completely different water requirements.
Yep.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, Bob, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
They're pretty.
They are pretty, and they do look like Christmas tree ornaments, don't they? And Phil in Hebron, Illinois is up next. Phil, hi to you.
Good morning, fellow gardeners, hoping for spring.
Yes.
You bet.
I have a question for you. I'm in Illinois, but I've got some friends in Wisconsin. I recently received a listing of plants available from a Wisconsin nursery listing some very good deals on a large number of ash trees and cultivars. Are those recommended for Wisconsin with our problem here in Illinois?
I haven't been recommending ash for a couple of years because I know that if the insect, the emerald ash borer, isn't here already, that it very shortly will be. And I just would hate to have somebody invest in a tree that, you know, should have a good 35, 40-year lifespan in an urban suburban situation, not a downtown urban situation, and find out that, you know, it's going to be
the old
toast.
Emerald ash borer has come in.
So that would be regardless of cultivar or anything like that? They're all going to be a problem?
They're all going to be a problem, most unfortunately, yeah. It does seem to show a few species preferences, but it is quite happy to eat any of our ash species.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your gardening question, be it indoors or outdoors. We're glad to talk with you about your question. You know, the ash trees, there are some people who say, well, I'm still going to, still going to plant because an ash tree because I'm hoping that they'll come up with a cure for beating the emerald ash borer. And
that's fine.
That's fine.
You know, if you go into it understanding the risk.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, we certainly have our share of ash trees. You know, it's not as though they're going to go away if we don't plant another one.
Yeah, well, I hope they won't.
I hope they won't. Well, if the emerald, yeah, there, it's become, it was, unfortunately, I think we, a lot of cities sort of forgot about Dutch elm disease when it came to planting trees, and we got into, in several places, into almost a monoculture.
Exactly.
Of everybody planting all ash trees, and that's
diversity is what they grow fast.
Yeah.
And they're tolerant of salt and urban conditions and compacted soil, and so, you know, it seemed like a good thing. But you're exactly right, Larry, that monoculture is not a good thing, and we need to have a variety, diversity of trees in our city
landscape
planting schemes.
Margaret in Madison has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to ask Lisa, I just noticed that my Caria japonica have been decimated this winter.
Rabbits,
probably,
right?
By rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I have one too, and yes, indeed, they do regard those as some of their favorite foods.
And I don't begrudge them, given the kind of weather we've had, but I'm just wondering, because I've got about four of them, and I'm wondering if, even though they've been pretty much eaten down, will they regrow come spring? Will they be sending up new shoots or not?
Are these very young plants, or are they established plants?
Oh, they're established plants. They've been, 4 or 5 years.
Okay, then they probably will come back. I've had mine chewed down pretty far. You may want to, if this continues to be a problem, though, you may want to put fencing around them for the winter.
Yeah, I never had it happen before. So I'm imagining then that, you know, I have them interplanted with my lilacs, and it's always such a pretty display in the spring. And
sure.
I'm figuring that this spring, I'm sure not going to get any flowers.
No.
Well, you actually probably will, because they bloom on new wood.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, unlike the lilacs that bloom on old wood.
Yeah, I was just thinking that since they'd, you know, gotten so chewed down, that they'd probably be putting all of their energy into just growing new stems. But, no, that would be great.
Yeah, it won't be the floral display you're used to, but you probably will get a few sporadic flowers. You're right. It will be putting most of the energy into, we hope, into, because sometimes they aren't all that smart that way. Mm-hmm. And they do put out some flowers where their energies would be better concentrated on putting out foliage.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret, for calling. Joya in Fitchburg, your turn now. Hi, Joya.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
Yeah, I have a question. I have some seeds which were sent to me last year from one of the nurseries in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of late by the time they sent, so they said to, start the seeds in the early spring or late February. It's a sunflower seed.
Uh-huh.
And something, some gentian violet.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so those are perennial seeds. So is it too late to put them, start them in the garage?
You can. Most of the sunflower seeds you start outside, though, right after the last frost. So usually, you know, May, well, in our area, I'm not sure what zone you're in.
She's in Fitchburg. So
Fitchburg.
Oh, okay. I thought.
So
okay.
It's zone four.
Okay. Then probably the 20th of May, 15th to 20th. In the Madison area, it's 15th. But if you're zone four, then it would be. A little later than that. But usually we do just start the sunflowers.
Stick them in the ground.
Yeah, by sticking them in the ground. And the gentian, boy, I'm really not sure. I've never seeded gentian before. But if they said to start it in late February, I think you're fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give it a try, Joya.
Okay.
And have you got lights to start them under?
No, I have natural sunlight.
Okay.
It's a south side window.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, great. Perfect.
So I can do that.
Yeah.
Just bring the tray by the south side window.
Right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And more callers. Let's go to Jill in Manitowish Waters. Jill, hi.
Hi. I've got a seeds from American chestnut from a tree in the UP. A friend of mine owns the property.
Yeah.
I understand they're very rare, and this tree, apparently, busloads of kids and people come to see this tree, actually. I've had them in the fridge all winter in moist paper towel, you know, getting winterized. And I wonder when I should start them. And I want to put them in pots because I'm going to be moving. And could you advise me about that?
Yeah, I can tell you where to find the answer. There is a book that is published by Michael Durr that is called something on the order of Propagation of Woody Plants, Woody Ornamentals.
Okay.
And I just looked at this thing yesterday.
How's Durr spelled? Michael, is it?
D-I-R-R.
D-I-R-R, okay.
Right. And this book is fantastic because every woody species that you can just about think of, he has when you should take cuttings, if you have seeds, what you need to do to get them to germinate, whether they need a cold treatment, whether they need
to have
the seeds scarified, scratched with sandpaper or some other thing, when is the best time to plant them.
That's a great book.
Yeah, it is. And we use it in the office all the time. I was just kicking myself for not bringing it, but it definitely would have the information that you're looking for.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Thank you.
Michael
mm-hmm.
Durr, D-I-R-R. All right. And while I'm looking, Ray and Baraboo's up next. Let's go to Ray. Hi, Ray.
Oh, hi. I've got a I think the red maple tree we planted about 8 years ago, we bought it and planted it. And anyway, this winter it got hit with the snowblower a little bit and pulled the bark half off of it. About a foot and a half up from the ground and maybe 8 inches long. Is there anything I can do about it, or is it pretty much going to die?
Is it just on one side of the tree?
Yes.
Okay, and is it a young tree?
Yeah, it's we bought it as a sapling and planted it maybe 7-8 years ago.
Okay.
So it's a diameter of a couple inches?
Yeah. Excuse me, yeah.
Mm. I was going to say, if it's an older tree, just trim up the area around the wound and, you know, clean it up as best you can. I would say if it's a young tree like that, you may lose it. I can't say for sure, but it's entirely possible.
I wouldn't give up on it yet, though.
What you may just end up losing is a branch or two. But do indeed clean up that wound and
don't cover it with anything.
Yes, don't put any pruning paint or anything like that on it. Just clean up the edges where the diseases can get in. It's much better if you have a clean surface, clean cut, as opposed to raggedy edges.
Okay, because it's just peeled the bark off the trunk in the one spot. That's,
yeah, it should be all right.
Branch or anything. So.
Yeah, but the material underneath the cambium, the vascular system that is sort of like our circulatory system that supplies different parts of the tree with water, may have been damaged to the point where you may lose a branch here
above
or there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right above
it. We'll let her go and see what happens.
Yeah, you bet. Let us know, Ray.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, with our guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Lisa Johnson on this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. We'll take some calls right away here. Going to Mary in Muskego next. Hi, Mary.
Thank you for taking my call. I wonder if you can help me. I decided to try some heirloom seeds last spring, and tomato plants in particular, and it was called the Cherokee Purple. I purchased them from Baker Creek Seeds. It's like a seed co-op of heirloom seeds. My tomatoes, I planted, I think, three or four plants, and only one came up. It came up very late. It had very few leaves on it and was tall and spindly. And I thought, oh, what should I do? Do you have any suggestions? Because should I start them indoors? Or how do I proceed with heirloom seeds? Obviously, they're a lot more difficult than our seeds today.
You may have gotten a bad batch, too, because usually tomato seeds at least come up fairly well. But I always start them inside Well, you could even start them this next week. Usually I start them like the second week in March and then put them out. If you're adventurous, you could put them out like the second week in May. But here in, I don't know where you're calling from. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Muskego.
Okay, so you could probably put them out around the 15th of May. And if we do get a frost or freeze warning, you can cover them with something.
Right.
And one of the good products to use is the wall of water. You may have heard of that. It's a plastic tent type thing.
Right.
And there even are some that are made out of red plastic now.
Yes,
and yeah, and those are particularly good for tomato plants. So you may want to try that. But I would try sowing them in crumbly media, one of the seed germinating mixes that you can find really easily in your local garden center, and plant them as the seeds as directed, and you should have no problem with germination.
Oh, okay. All right. I was disappointed, and I thought, oh, is my sound really bad? I went out and bought Celebrity, which is a tomato plant that is it's fantastic for me, just because I wanted tomatoes, but I was so disappointed. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your answer.
Those Cherokee Purple are supposed to be really good eating tomatoes.
Yeah.
That's why I saw colored pictures, photographs, and I thought, oh, does this sound yummy? Well, I thought, well, I'll mix them in with my regulars, but I didn't have any luck at all.
Hmm.
They like a drier condition, I know. They grow in Arkansas, that area of the country, and they do like it a little drier.
Is sand an issue? I mean, should I put sand in the soil?
No. No, I wouldn't do that. The one thing around the Madison area that we tend to have trouble with in the really hot, dry times of the year is we sometimes have problems with blossom end rot, and that's because we have difficulty with maintaining the consistency of the moisture. You need to keep it not too wet, not too dry, and not have it go from very wet to very dry. Sometimes people let their tomatoes dry out too much before they water, and so then they end up with that blossom end rot, which is a calcium transport problem. But usually we do fairly well unless there is some kind of disease organism in your soil like Fusarium or something that tomatoes have a problem with.
Yeah, good luck.
I've been real lucky. I've had that blossom end rot a little, just a little, not too much. But I've gotten a lot of tomatoes off my plants, and I was really looking forward to this heirloom tomato, and I was very disappointed.
Yeah.
Try it again.
Try it again. Try it again. Let us know. Boy, just talk about tomatoes. You know, just a fresh, oh, man, right off the vine tomato. Wouldn't that taste good right about now?
Oh,
oh man. Thanks, Mary. Oh, for giving me that that thought in my brain about those great tasting tomatoes. Amanda and Madison, will go to you. Hi, Amanda.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I just recently acquired a pet jade plant around September, and I was wondering if with a plant like that, if it will ever grow bigger, or if I wanted it to grow bigger, would putting it in a bigger pot be an option?
All right, we got a jade plant here, and our caller, you're breaking up, Amanda. So I'm gonna.
You gonna try and translate for me?
Translate that for you. She's got a jade plant. She got it a few months back.
Okay.
And she has it in a small pot and wonders if a jade plant will grow much larger. And to make it grow much larger, would it be good to put it in a bigger pot?
Okay. Jade plants like to have, they're in a group of plants that tend to have fairly small root systems to begin with, and they like to have what we call tight roots. So they don't like to be in a really large pot. Depending, you know, if it's in a really small pot right now and it keeps tipping over with the weight of the plant, then you might want to move it into the next size plant or pot. Make sure that the pot is not any bigger in diameter than 2 inches bigger than the plant or the pot that it's in right now. And with a plant like jade, I'd probably make sure that it isn't any bigger than 1 inch bigger because, again, yeah, they do like to have small small spaces for their root systems, so the roots are kind of crowded together. Jades are not the fastest growers in the world. I would be kind of sparing with fertilizer and things like that. Be sure not to overwater it or overfeed it in your quest to make it grow bigger.
Okay, good luck. Thanks, Amanda. And Mary in Ridgefield, I believe, is next. Let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hello. 2 questions. I'm interested in the Japanese maple trees,
mm-hmm.
but the catalogs I've been getting say they're all Zone 5, and we're Zone 4, although I've seen them sold around here. So I'm wondering, what's the deal on those?
Mary, from what
Ridgefield.
Ridgefield. Okay, give me a clue.
We're outside of Milwaukee.
You're outside of Milwaukee. Oh, okay. Well, Milwaukee's Zone 5, Zone 6.
Well, we're definitely Zone 4 here.
You are? Okay.
Yeah, we're far enough away from the lake.
Okay. You could try one, but I would put it in a very protected area. Like if you have a kind of a corner area that doesn't, you know, that isn't facing south or something, so that it doesn't warm up too quickly in the spring, but on the other hand is protected from north winds that you get in the winter. You can also do things like wrap it with burlap for the winter, particularly for its first winter. That can help you out. And some of the hardier cultivars would be Emperor. There are also, you might want to look into the Korean maple, which is the full moon maple, and that one is a lot hardier. That one is actually for Zone 4 and does do very well, and it also gets gorgeous fall color.
What's the name of that one?
It's a Korean maple.
Yes.
Acer pseudo-ciboldiana. Oh. I didn't think you'd want that part.
No.
But
Korean maple will find it, though. Okay. And then my second question is, I have some huge cedar trees on the property, and I'd love to plant flowering crab trees, but I'm told that they can get, a rust?
Rust.
Yeah, cedar apple rust. Are you talking about cedars as in arborvitaes, or are you talking about red cedar as in an upright juniper?
Tall trees. I don't know. They're not arborvitae. They're tall cedar trees.
Okay. If they are truly cedar trees, which is Juniperus virginiana, then yes, indeed, they are susceptible to that, and you'd be setting yourself up a nice little disease system.
Okay.
You can get some crab apples that are resistant to it. So you may want to look for some of those cultivars, and that may help you out.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck, Mary. Thank you. Don in Presque Isle, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi, it's Dan, D-A-N.
Oh, sorry, Dan.
And guest. Hey, I'm calling. We're from Presque Isle, as you know, and we're in Florida right now, and we do have fresh tomatoes.
Oh, boo.
Making us jealous.
And strawberries. Okay. Question. Just for fun, I took some acorns from Wisconsin and brought them down here to Florida with us and put them in a pot. And I have one that is about 4 inches tall with four big leaves on it. Will it survive in Florida, or do I have to take it back to Wisconsin?
It'll probably survive in Florida as long as it doesn't get too dry.
Oh, okay, good. I didn't know if it needed the season of cold or whatever.
Well, it's the kind of the other problem if you brought something from Florida and tried to grow it in Wisconsin that might be more,
doesn't
of,
work
a,
as well.
More of a problem.
Right.
Okay. But there are oak trees that do grow in Florida, and I don't see why it shouldn't unless, again, it gets too hot and dry. But it's certainly worth a try.
We have the live oak, but I think it's more of a weed than it is a tree. Okay. Well, thank you very much. We'll leave it down here and see what happens.
Yeah, keep eating your tomatoes.
My wife has got a question here. What?
Oh, should we be fertilizing it at all?
Oh.
Sure, you could fertilize it once maybe as a young growing tree. That wouldn't be a problem. I wouldn't fertilize it a whole lot, but a little bit wouldn't hurt.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Ott.
When it gets warm, we'll be back in Wisconsin.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Dan. And good luck. Earl in Chautauqua coming up next here. By the way, we've got open lines, and you can join us now at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's take Earl in Chautauqua right now. Hi, Earl.
Well, hello. How are you folks today?
Just great. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. Enjoy your program immensely. I have a question. The other day, last weekend, I'm looking out over my orchard from the house, and here are these little rabbits, these pests.
Oh.
They're gnawing on something. I go out there, and I see my crab apple trees at about 2 years old. They've nibbled on the bark.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is that will that take, and I see on my apple tree, on one of the apple trees I planted a couple of years ago, the same thing, and I didn't realize, I thought them being a couple of years old, I didn't realize that the rabbits would do that.
Well, they will do it in winters where there's nothing else to eat, and they do particularly like the bark on fruit trees, and particularly young ones. I'd say, probably 3 or 4 years from now, you're likely to have less of a problem with that. If they have girdled all the way around, then unfortunately your tree is probably toast.
Oh, okay. And that was my next question is, how severe does the wound have to be before the tree dies? So.
That is an excellent question. What we worry about with the girdling damage is what I was talking about a little earlier in the show. Right underneath the bark is a layer called the cambium, and that cambium is very close to the xylem, which is the water-carrying vessels that the tree has. So it would be, if you remove those vessels, then the tree has no way to pull up water from the ground or to send photosynthates from the leaves down to the roots. So you're kind of starving it, or at mm-hmm. least cutting off its water supply. And since those vessels may go to several different branches, one branch in that particular area, it's really hard to tell because they don't always go straight up. Sometimes they spiral around. It may only affect one branch. It may affect a number of branches, depending on how large the wound is.
Okay.
So it's really hard for me to predict. The younger the tree is, of course, the worse the damage is going to be proportionately.
Now, if it just nibbled here and there, will it heal itself?
It will callus over. It won't regenerate that vascular tissue.
Oh, it will not.
Okay. No, but... So you may see, depending on how big the area is, you may see a little damage, you may see a lot of damage. And if it goes all the way around, well, then your tree doesn't have any way to feed itself.
and I don't think bunnies are cute. A lot of people do. But
I know, the little furry vermin.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Earl. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right. From bunnies, where are we going next? Let's go to John in Appleton, see what's on John's mind. Hi, John.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Oh, I've got quite the population of earwigs in the backyard. Curious if you've got any way to put push them away safely.
Earwigs. Okay. Earwigs tend to like to live in cool, moist areas. So if you've got a lot of shade, if you have a lot of, now I'm a big fan of, bark mulch on the soil, but they do like to hide under bark mulch.
Okay.
You can use some of the same things that we do for slugs. You can use, you know, beer to attract a bunch of them. And when they fall in and drown, then you can dispose of them. There are chemical options as well. But I think the best thing to do would be to try and remove as many hiding places as you can. Things like piles of firewood or piles of weeds that they might hide under. Just try and keep the sanitation at a good level so things are dried out and not so attractive to them.
Okay. One other quick question. Wild rice, the stuff they sell in the store, would that be able to grow, or is that...
It's a water plant.
It's a water plant, yeah. It grows in lakes. And
oh, yes, I understand that. Would I be able to plant what I purchased from the store that people eat?
Oh, to get it to grow?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
That would depend.
I don't know whether they've been treated or dried or, you know.
We'd have to look into that. I know you can, in some places you can harvest it, but you need a license in order to do it. But I'm just not sure. That's one I'll...
Yeah. We'll have to look that up.
We'll look that up and see what we can come up with.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Doris in Shawnee County, it's your turn. Hi, Doris.
Hi. I have a Fredonia grape. Last year it leafed out. It was just beautiful. And all at once I noticed the leaves looked so wilted. And we had hot, dry weather, and so I soaked it good, but it never survived. I'm wondering if it was some kind of a fungus or what is the probability of it sprouting out this year. I had a Red Reliance right next to it, and that one did not. It was all right.
That one was okay.
And you've not had this kind of problem with your grapes before?
No. They were wonderful. I got huge crop from them.
And you said that the leaves looked funny? They were wilted, but did they have any kinds of spots on them?
I really don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember.
There are a number of different diseases.
While you're thinking about that, let me this may be too far away for you, Doris, in Shawnee County, but Philippe Cocard of Wallersheim Winery at Prairie du Sac is going to be offering grapevine pruning demonstrations this Saturday from 10:15 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon. That's on Saturday. It's 2 o'clock to 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock, 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock. Sorry, and again Sunday at 11 and 3 is he going to be doing that? And that's part of their annual open house, which is free and open to the public. Mm-hmm. And it really is a fun, fun time, a fun way to spend some time on the weekend at Wallersheim Winery in Prairie du Sac. And he, of course, would have the answer. Probably right off the top of his head about Doris's question here.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of is if it does come up and start showing the same symptoms, is to send a sample of it to our campus here in Madison for disease diagnosis.
The Plant Diagnostic Center at the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and they could probably tell you then what the story is with it. There is a charge for it, but you know, if it's been a good productive plant in the past, it might be worth it.
Might be worth it. And
how long, if I would buy a new root, how long would it take before it would bear?
You know, I think that's going to depend on the size of the root that you buy and the cultivar, but I think it takes a couple seasons.
Couple seasons before you get any large amount anyway, I would think. So I'll tell you what, Doris, hop in the car and head off to Wallersheim Winery at Prairie du Sac this weekend, Saturday or Sunday, and you'll have a great time there. And you'll also have a chance to ask those kinds of questions. I tell you what, the people there know what they're talking about, and it's a fun event. So if you can do that, that'd be wonderful. And appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Rick in Milwaukee, I think, has a question for us. So let's go to Rick. Rick, hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've got some plants currently growing in my yard. I've got a garden plot there, and I'd like to transplant some of them. And I'd like to know when is appropriate to do that. The three in particular I'm thinking of, I've got Heliopsis, I've got Black-Eyed Susans, and I've got some ferns. And my question is, can I do that as soon as the snow is out, or must I wait till it gets a little warmer, or what's the right time to transplant those?
Well, I would definitely wait until probably the end of May. You want the plants to come out a bit. Particularly the ferns sometimes can be a little slow in coming out for the season. And
they can be pretty hardy, though.
Right. And we want to make sure also that hopefully we're not going to have any more frosts or freezes that would put any more stress on the plant when you do transplant it. I like to do it that way because, you want to make it the least stressful that you can. You want to do it early so that the plant, it's still the cool, moist time of the season. But you don't want to do it so early that it's stressful.
Yep.
And the same is true of the Black-Eyed Susan and Heliopsis?
Yeah, I think you could do those
pretty much
at the same time.
All in late May.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'll do.
All right, Rick, thanks for calling. And Terry in Marshfield, we'll get to you in just a second. Just to remind you, Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Lisa Johnson on this edition of Garden Talk. Give us a call. We got an open line. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Terry in Marshfield is next. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a little question. I put in a couple of little birch trees close to our front sidewalk and went to pretty much great lengths to keep them from being plowed over by the snowplow guy, which they're right by the sidewalk. So the snow was piled up around them, and then we have a couple of goats, and they ate the tops of them off.
Oh, boy.
So I don't know if I should just dig them up and start over, or is there any hope that they'll be there?
Oh, man.
Oh, dear.
No, that doesn't sound like good news.
Well, first of all, birch trees are not very... what's the word I'm looking for, Larry? They're not very resistant to salt and urban conditions. So if your road does get salted, and also the soil in those terrace areas tends to be fairly compacted and fairly hot in the middle of the summer, so it's not a good place to plant a birch to begin with, because they really need cool, moist soils and conditions where they can have a cool root run. So if your goats ate the tops off, I think you probably will need to start over. Were these white paper bark birches, or were they river birches? Or
I think they were. They're white. I can't remember if they were like white Japanese birch or something. I don't really remember exactly the names.
Yeah, well, they do like to be in a partially shaded area. They're not very fond of a lot of compacted soils and cars going by, and certainly not salt. So try and find an area like that for your new birch site. And they also like to have mulch over the roots as opposed to turf.
Okay, well, we live on a dirt road, and our house is way back, so I don't think a lot of salt would have gotten there. I just didn't know if the branches would grow up after the goats ate the top of them off.
They may, but it's going to look awful funny.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
You might try and prune them up and see whether they will grow for you. But from what you're describing in the picture I have in my head, they probably wouldn't do so well.
All right.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Terry. And Patty in Madison, you're up. Hi, Patty.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I have a question. I have been searching for a shrub for the front of my home that's more vertical in nature than horizontal, and that would flower. However, it's north facing, so I don't really see much sunlight. It doesn't get much sunlight, and that sun which it does receive is filtered through some other trees.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. What color is your house?
Oh, gray with green. So it looks a little bit more like a green, but it's...
Okay, so it's not a white house. It's not a light color.
No.
Because you can get a lot of reflected sunlight, and sometimes you can get away with more under with a white house. Okay, so this is under, is it under trees as well, or it's just the shadow of the house that's the problem?
No, it would be under, there's a silver maple, so that provides some shade, and then there's another tree that I'm not sure what it is that also gives it. So it doesn't ever get any direct sun.
Okay, are you, well, I know you said you wanted something that flowered, but how about an evergreen? You prefer
yeah,
not to
Yeah, I'm wondering, well, but evergreens, they maintain their color through the year.
Right.
There is no flowering. Is there anything that you think would survive that might have some sort of flower or even a fruit bearing, something that would give some more color for the wintertime?
Okay, well, viburnums I don't think are going to do well there because I don't think it's going to be quite enough sun. You might be able to get away with a gray dogwood. They do tend to sucker, however, but they would be upright. And so they would have fruit, but you would definitely need to watch out for the suckering. But they are a woodland plant, so and a native. So that might do for you. Certainly a pagoda dogwood would work in that situation, and that could probably give you some flowers and fruit, but it is going to get rather wide, being that it's in so much shade. That's all.
Can you prune?
You can.
The problem to prune it?
It's not. Well, there is a canker that plant can get, so I would do any pruning during the dormant season. But they are very beautiful. Beautiful shaped tree, and you can prune them so that they're a bit narrower.
Okay, and that would be the pagoda dogwood,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You could try that. You might. I don't know whether you're in an area that it sounds like it might be able to support a Japanese maple. They can take quite a bit of shade.
Well, they can't without losing the.
They will lose some of the color. They will lose some of the color.
Okay.
All right.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And just back to the caller who wondered about wild rice. There is a group called the International Wild Rice Association. And if you go to this website, which is a simple one, wildrice.org, there's all kinds of information there. It's a nonprofit group dedicated to the exchange of information and ideas relevant to wild rice production, processing, and marketing. So,
I love this. It's so wonderful. I love the part of my job that allows me to learn things like that all the time. So thank you, Wild Rice Caller.
Yeah, wildrice.org. They've even got recipes and history and all kinds of things on there. So
it is a cool crop, and the cultural history behind that is very neat. We had a group of kids for our nutrition class, and we played them a video that showed the Native Americans harvesting it with the bats from their canoes, and it's pretty neat.
Pretty neat. Joe in Viroqua is next. Joe, hello to you.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about poison parsnips. We have an open field. It's about 11 acres. And the children like to play in that field, and then last year the poison parsnips started coming up to where they couldn't really go into the field anymore.
Now you're talking about the wild parsnip that has the kind of yellow chartreusey flowers in June?
Yeah, it looks like a Queen Anne's lace, but yellow.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and the children get it. I mean, if they rub up against it and they're staying in the sunlight. Then
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, but someone told me that if we left it high, I was going to cut the field for hay.
Ooh.
But the poison parsnips is poisonous to farm animals. But now that we see it's coming up so much, I'm wondering if I should just keep it mowed really low. And if I keep it mowed low, will it die off sooner or later, or is there something to do to get rid of it?
Well, there are various chemicals that you can use on it. Actually, I co-authored a publication with a gentleman from DNR called named David Egan, and you can get this publication through DNR on the wild parsnip and how it came to be such a problem. Part of the problem is, of course, that it does seed prolifically, and if you cut it too early in the year, it will simply send out more flowers and more seeds. So you probably, if you're going to use cutting as your strategy, you need to be very cognizant of blooming and reblooming, and you want to cut it before it goes to seed, but after it has started blooming. So if you cut it a couple of times a year, that will certainly help you. I don't know if you're in an area where you might want to consider burning. You may need to get a permit to do that, but it is one of the things that first comes up after a burn, after a prairie burn. And at that time, since you can see it so well, you can go after it with spot treat it with Roundup. It will respond to Garlon as well. Some people have better luck with that than with Roundup. But if you do use a glyphosate product like Roundup, make sure that it has a decent amount of the active ingredient in it, not just a 1% for those little trigger sprayer ready-to-use types. Those are kind of wimpy. You probably want like 18% active ingredient.
Okay.
And you can find that right on the front of the bottle.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Levy in Emory, your turn. Hi.
Hello. I've got a question about some red maples in our front yard.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a growth on the leaves that shows up midsummer or so. And it's a growth that I've seen only before on plums. It's kind of it looks like a little plant sprouting right off the top of the leaf, and there'll be many of them on each leaf.
Oh, it's probably an insect gall of mm-hmm. Some kind. There's one called spindle gall that looks just like little tiny spindles coming up. There are others that are kind of fuzzy and bumpy that are on the leaves. There are even some that are brightly colored, like bright pink and kind of bumpy. All kinds of different galls. And you find those on oak trees and ash trees as well as maple trees. Usually it's just cosmetic damage. It isn't really going to hurt the tree that much, particularly if it's, you know, an older tree and it's not on every single leaf. What it is it's caused by some very, very small insects that lay their eggs in the leaf tissue. And in response, the leaf tissue creates all of these strange little growths. It's just a hormonal response. And depending on the type of insect, you get a different response. But usually it's just a cosmetic problem.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I do have some information to add about the wild rice.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
I've been ricing for a number of years and get pretty involved with it. The rice you buy in the store, you can't plant because
okay.
it's been parched, heated, digestible. Green rice will make you, a lot of people, sick.
Oh,
If you harvest rice, you can replant that rice by mixing it into little balls of clay or heavy mud and then throwing them off into water that's 1 to 3 feet in depth.
Cool.
That is so cool. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Have a good day.
Thanks, Levi. I appreciate the call.
A ricer. Okay.
Now we're learning more than
yeah.
we thought we'd learn about wild rice today, which is great. And Mike in Cambridge, I think, has a question for us. Let's go to Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
About a month ago, you had a person on discussing vegetables, and he would talk about the difference between sweet potatoes and yams and how one was much more vitamin-rich. Do you remember that?
Yes. I remember that conversation. That was with our Vicars of Vegetables.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Jim Nienhuis. Mm-hmm. And your question is?
Well, I was just wondering if you remember which one was the most vitamin-rich.
Yam or sweet potato? Sweet potato or yam?
I think it's the yam, but I'll have an answer for you in a minute on that one. I'm pretty sure it's the yam.
And then the other, I had just a short story. Our local municipality, our sewage treatment plant, for whatever reason, last summer had drained one of the ponds. And it's a long drive. I go down there kind of watching nature, a lot of wildlife down there. And I went back last fall, and here on the banks of this sewage treatment plant were every kind of tomato you could imagine growing. Apparently, they're the only thing that can pass through our digestive system and grow again. And I picked a couple, and they were the most flavorful tomatoes I've eaten for years.
They're probably growing in really rich, well-hydrated soil.
Well, good soil. And then someone else was talking about tomatoes, and I just wanted to throw in mine for Ponderosa Pink. That's what I grow now, and they seem to have a lot of flavor.
Wow. Okay. Neat. You know, there's a company that produces, well, they produce other seeds too, but I'm trying to remember what their name is. We did get seed from them last year for the teaching garden, but there are an awful lot of tomato varieties out there, and they all sound so good. Ponderosa Pink, I'll have to remember that one.
And we'll give you the word on sweet potatoes versus yams in just a few minutes here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Pleased to have her along. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And before we go back to the phones, just another word on sweet potatoes, just some little quick research I did here. Looks like sweet potatoes sort of have the edge. They're low in calories. They have no fat. They're rich in beta-carotene, about five times the recommended daily allowance of vitamin A in one sweet potato. So, you know, they've got nutrients that help prevent against heart attack and stroke, they say. So sweet potatoes are a good thing. Travis in Appleton, we'll go to you now. Hi, Travis.
Hey, how are you two today?
Great, thanks for calling.
Yeah, no problem. I had a great find the other day. I found some coffee plants, so I purchased about five of them, one for my office and home and for the other offices and whatnot. So, but I have a question, just because we're big coffee drinkers. When do the berries start to usually produce, and you know, how many years, I guess, does it take? And if there's any type of special circumstances or pots or soil we should be using?
Oh, well, I must admit this is not one of those things that I know a whole lot about. I've always seen them grown here in the North Country in indoor conditions, in kind of tropical situations. So I know that they like a lot of humidity. I'm kind of doubtful that they're actually going to produce much for you. Now, you may be able to move them outside for the summer, but I, frankly, Larry, I don't know whether they have male and female plants or whether they're perfect flowers or what the story is. We're kind of digging around here to see if we can find any information for you.
Yeah, I read that they're self-germinating. So
they're self-fertile,
yeah,
okay.
Or fertile, yeah. Is it germinating or fertile? Yeah, fertilizing, so they don't require male and female. So that's one thing that I did find out. Then I didn't know. But, yeah, I didn't know if they would indeed produce anything in there. They're small plants, which would probably get bigger. But mm-hmm. And I assume that we won't really get very much out of it, and I wouldn't know what to do with it once I got them. But I just kind of had, you know, it was a interesting find, and I thought I'd see if you guys had any ideas on them.
I do know they need they prefer fairly bright light. So if you're growing them in your house, an east or a west window would probably be helpful, where they get either morning light or afternoon light. I'm thinking probably the south might be a little too much unless they're pulled back from the window a bit.
What about indoor office lighting? You know, I don't know what they're called, fluorescent
lighting. Yeah, the fluorescent lights. I don't frankly think they'll do real well. They probably just won't grow very fast. And
well, I can move it to a window, but I just didn't know if that would grow them very well.
Yeah. The problem with fluorescent lights is that they provide the blue light waves that the plants need for photosynthesis, but not the red. Incandescents produce more of the red, or you may just want to switch out your office fluorescent bulbs with grow lights. which are also in those long, you can get in those long tubes. So that probably would help your situation. What you got there, Larry? Anything?
Well, I'm not coming up with too much here yet, but I'm sure there. I know there's plenty online about it, but I just haven't gotten to the right spot.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Sorry.
I wish I had it, but I just don't have it right now. I might still be able to find something. Samantha in Black Earth, we'll go to you. Hi, Samantha.
Hi, Larry. A couple of years ago, we moved out to Black Earth, and the person who'd had the lot there before us had totally let it overgrow, and it had pretty much overgrown pretty all with buckthorn.
Oh.
So I've been trying to reclaim it a little bit at a time, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions about how to do that. Also, it's growing over my well cap, and so I don't know what to do about that in particular because I don't want to use poisons over my well.
Yeah. Buckthorn is... This is one I can answer. buckthorn is not a nice plant at all. It does come in two sexes, the male and the female. So if you do have plants that are bearing the fruits, those are the ones to get rid of first because those are the females. And the seeds are spread by birds who just love to eat them and spread them everywhere. So that is another problem. So get rid of the females first. And the way that you do that is you cut the tree down to the ground as far as you can get it, and then you use a concentrate. Now, this isn't going to help around your well because I am going to recommend chemicals for this. If you just cut them down, they will sprout back. Probably it'd be like Hercules and the Hydra, you know, where you get two heads in place of one. Yeah, so you need to do what he did, which is cauterize it in some fashion. And I usually recommend either a pretty stiff mix of Roundup. You can use it right from the can, and you need to use something that's like 35% active ingredient, or you can use Ortho Brush Control, which is a 2,4-D type product. And what you do is you just paint it on the cut stump as soon as you can after you have made the cut. And the very best time of year to do this is in fall, because at that time the tree is pulling all of the sugars that the leaves made during the season down into its root system to store them for the winter. So it at that time absorbs the chemical best and pulls it right on down too. But you certainly can do it in, you know, spring and summer, because I recognize that you've got a big task in front of you and you can't just wait until fall. Around your well cap, boy, I don't know what to tell you there, other than to just keep cutting it.
Can you smother it?
Not really. It's it's very persistent. You know, you can try girdling it, but then it does tend to still come up from underneath. So I'm guessing that just time and patience and trying to dig out as much of it as you can. And if you do dig up any of it, make sure to pat the soil back in place, because you don't want to bring up any seeds if it was a female. If it wasn't a female, you're okay. But, you know, whenever you disturb the soil, you usually bring up some kind of nasty thing that's been waiting there.
Okay.
Well, so those are the best tips I can give you.
Thanks so much.
Sure.
Thanks very much for calling. Or let's see, some cement over the top of the well.
Yeah, no, that I don't think that's been tried yet, Larry. That might work.
Oh boy, David and Ladysmith, on to you. Hi, David.
How you doing today?
Good.
Good. I have a question. I have a real hard time in my garden. I can grow tomatoes. I can grow peppers. I can grow cucumbers, but I can't grow peas and beans. I have a real rich soil. I've tried lime, I've tried sphagnum, peat moss, and I just can't get them to grow.
When do you plant?
I usually plant in early June.
Okay, the peas can go in real early.
Real early.
Usually around tax time, around April 15th. But the beans should go... early June is a good time to seed beans. You could even seed them at the end of May.
I get plants, but I don't get any...
Any flowers. Okay, you've got too much nitrogen in the soil then.
That's what somebody had told me, and I put lime, I think too much lime, maybe, I'm not sure, but I'd had the pH tested, and it tested at like 5.9.
Oh, okay, yeah, that is a little bit acidic for beans. And you have added lime.
Yes.
What did it test to after that?
That's when I had it tested after I had Lyme last year.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, because I think usually 6.5, I think, is what beans need. 6.5 to 6.8. So you may need to keep working on that. Maybe a raised bed might be the answer for you.
Now, I have quite a bit of shade throughout the day.
That's another problem. Yeah, that is likely a problem for that. I'm surprised you do get tomatoes, though, or peppers, because they also need quite a bit of...
sun.
Yeah, a bit of sun. But beans are plants that really need those long days of sun, so... it's probably both the soil and the sunlight that's the problem for you.
Okay, very good.
Thanks for calling. You know, you might try the peas, you know, about tax time, plant the peas. They really are a cool season crop.
Yeah, they are.
Just give that a shot.
And if the trees aren't leafed out at that time, you might...
you're going to get better growth.
Yeah.
Yep, good luck. Irene in Madison, hi to you.
I'm fine. I work in a garden center. I answer these kind of questions all the time. Tomatoes need light when they germinate, right after they germinate.
Yeah.
You need to get your lights about 2 inches away from them if you're using fluorescents. That's why they're leggy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And birches that have been chopped off by goats will sprout no branches and will grow straight up.
Will they?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll just have a little crook in them. If they're young enough, it will eventually disappear.
That's
so that
good
you'll
to know.
Have a straight trunk.
Of course, we don't know how far down the goats have eaten them, but...
No. And on your buckthorn around the well, I would use what they call stump and brush killer on that. It's a product that you cut the buckthorn, and as soon as the top hits the ground, you're painting that little stump with the chemical, and that's all you do. You don't spray it or anything.
Yeah.
It
stays inside the plant.
Okay, yeah, as would Roundup, but since she said she didn't want to use any chemicals there, I was
like
hesitant
to
recommend it.
You have to make compromises, and I don't think that will go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Irene.
Thank you.
Sure.
Appreciate the call. All right. As often, we get callers who call in and help us out. Dan in Hartford, your turn now. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I have a question on trimming apple trees this time of the year. I have a wide variety of different types of apple trees, from full to miniature to dwarf miniatures, and I'm wondering, I've never cut off any of the suckers and stuff to get a better apple crop, and I'm wondering how I do that and what we do.
This is the best time of year to prune apple trees in the dormant season. That's when it's recommended. We do have a very nice publication on training young apple trees that deals with the pruning, and it has pictures and so on. So I'd definitely recommend that you check that out at thelearningstore.edu, or actually it's just learningstore.edu, and that's where our publication site is. But with suckers that come up from the base of the plant, you simply cut them right off at the ground level, and you do want to make sure that you have a clean set of pruning shears when you do that.
I was sort of thinking about, up on the tree itself, you know, getting rid of I said it wrong, not suckers, the water...
Oh, the water sprouts, the ones that go straight up. Yeah,
and
this is a great time, too.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
to get rid of those.
Are they just a straight-up thing, so they don't have extra branches on them? You just look for the ones and snip them off back to wherever they're coming out of?
Yeah, you take them back to the main branch where they're coming out of. And the reason, of course, that you take them off is that they are not very productive as far as fruits go. They'll produce leaves, but they're just going to, you know, produce shade. So you want to take those out so that you open up your tree, and the branches that do produce the apples are going to get the sunlight then.
Mm-hmm.
And is this time of the year, is it okay to trim, you know, back generally the whole tree here and there if you wanted to
shape it?
Am I cutting off apples?
Yes, you are. But this is the best time as far as trying to shape the tree, because you can see what's going on, and there aren't as many diseases and insects at this time. Well, there aren't any.
No, there aren't any right now.
So that's why they always recommend doing apple pruning when everything's dormant.
After I trim that, would that be the time to spray it with the dormant oil spray?
You certainly could do it at that point in time,
okay.
If you've got scales or something like that.
You never know what you get every year.
Right.
It's always an adventure.
Is there a difference between the types of trees, or if they're the water sprouts on miniatures and dwarf miniatures too? I don't see many of them, but...
You don't tend to get as many as you do on standards and semi-standards and semi-dwarfs.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thank you for calling. And let's go to Tom in Janesville next. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good afternoon. Listen, I got this wild idea this year that I'd like to try growing a couple of these dwarf citrus trees that come from South America or whatever. A little, they get 4 feet high and potted jobs. They come, you know, key limes and Myers limes and that. And I'm going to have to take them indoors over the winter, of course. Mm-hmm. And I've never worked with these before. My wife has a prolific jungle in front of the patio door, so I can't put them there. So I'm wondering the best way to make sure that they survive over the winter indoors.
Wow.
Okay, well, you're going to need a lot of very bright light. A southern exposure would be ideal, western, if not that. If you don't even have those, you probably will want to purchase some grow lights. Otherwise, they are going to drop one heck of a lot of leaves for you.
Yeah, grow lights is what I had in mind, and I wondered if that would work all right.
It's best if you have full sunlight and you can supplement with grow lights.
I see.
But, you know, I recognize that you can only do the best that you can do. Maybe you can persuade your wife to move a little bit of her jungle over so you can fit your trees in. I do know some people that do have lemon trees that, in fact, they gave me one beautiful big lemon that they grow on there. They have kind of a solarium room that has a skylight and so on, so they have very good light. You do have to watch out for pests because they seem to be just magnets for things like white flies and scales and spider mites in particular. So do scout your plant fairly often. Turn over the leaves, see if there's anything crawling there. If you feel that the leaves are sticky, it could be that there's a sucking insect on your plant somewhere, so be sure and take care of that. Be sure that you spray the plant off well before you bring it inside from having been outside over the summer. But other than that, making sure not to overwater, but not to keep it too dry either. They work out pretty well if given the appropriate conditions.
Cool. The pot size, whatever they come in, I assume you're going to have to change it sooner or later.
Yeah, if you notice that there are roots coming out of the bottom, or if you notice on top of the soil that there are roots snaking around everywhere, you can move it into the next size pot up. And again, measuring across the top of the pot, the diameter for the new pot shouldn't be any more than 2 inches larger than the old one.
Wow.
And make sure that it's in with a media that has good drainage.
And do you recommend a particular medium, a mix?
No, just a good houseplant mix.
Okay.
They do have some that are specialized for citrus now. So if you can find some of those, they have a lot of bark in them and so on that assists with the drainage.
I'll look for it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Jeff and Rhinelander, on to you. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Great show, as always.
Thanks.
I have a real large blackberry and raspberry field, probably about 3/4 acre.
Wow.
I believe it's natural.
Maybe you'd like to send us some.
Yeah. Well, when we first bought the house in 2000, and the person that had it before us must have knew how to tend it or whatever, because we had literally so many. I mean, we didn't sell them or anything, but I had relatives coming from Eau Claire and everywhere else. Just,
oh, I bet.
I mean, we couldn't run out. It was incredible. But over the years, you know, I didn't know how to take care of it, so I just kind of let it do its thing. And I was overseas with the military from 2004 through 2006 and kind of neglected it. And I noticed that the berries, and of course it was dry years.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you know, and you see the dead, I don't know what you call them, but the
canes.
Dead. Yeah, okay. And so I guess I just kind of want to know, what can I do? I really would love to bring that back this year and have it come back to a better state. Any suggestions?
Okay. All right, let's deal with the raspberries first.
They're all mixed in. Is that odd?
Well, it kind of is odd.
Because you get raspberries, and then, you know, all of a sudden you'll see the green berries come up with the blackberries. It's all in the same spot.
Okay, are these truly blackberries, or are they black raspberries?
No, I'm sure they're, well, they're, you're right. They're not the big, big blackberries, but maybe they are black.
They might be black raspberries. There is a cultivar called Royalty that, you know, they are maybe an inch long, and they're. I always like the black ones myself, The red ones are delicious as well. Okay, well then we take care of them the same way, and we have much less of a problem. I'm assuming these are probably June bearers, but you may have some ever bearers in there as well. The June or late July or, you know, well, okay, let me start over again. The June to late June types will send up a shoot the first year that's called a primocane, and it doesn't bear berries. It doesn't flower or bear berries that first year.
Okay.
And the second year, when it's still there, of course, over the winter, the second year it sprouts branches and produces flowers and fruits. After that, you can cut it down. So if you have ones where you can see that you had berries from last year, those are no good anymore. Take those out.
Oh, so you just pull them out by the roots or cut them?
Just cut them.
Cut them.
Okay.
Just cut them. Because the roots will continue to send up new canes for you.
Okay.
Now, usually raspberry patches are good for about 8 to 10 years to be in maximum productiveness. However, you know, if you're not real concerned about that, don't worry about, you know, digging up the whole patch right now. You may want to replace them a few at a time if you notice they aren't productive anymore. But you're going to need to thin them out. And we do have another, I'm going to plug another great extension publication at learningstore.edu that's on raspberries, how to train them, how to prune them. But this is a great time of year to do that, although right now they're probably buried under three feet of snow, so you may have to wait a little while. But that's the basic idea, is that every fall you cut out the stuff, or early spring, you cut out the stuff that bore last year. And
okay. Well, that's great to know, because I really haven't done a whole lot with it, but I know that's what the... I could tell they were dead and didn't know exactly what to do, and it has grown up with some weeds in between and things like that. And
you have a job.
I know that before we got the house, I'm pretty sure that he burned a big old brush pile one winter. So I wonder if maybe that's what helped it out too, because he kind of burned the area. Yeah. Is that possible? Would the roots stay, and then would that help them to rejuvenate?
Not as much as some other plants, I wouldn't think. I mean, I think they could handle it probably, but it's not going to help your productivity any.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, hey, thank you very much. And I will go to that learningstore.edu.
Yep.
Yep. That's a great place. And learningstore.edu, that website has not only plants, but it's got a little of everything.
Wildlife.
There is landscaping. There are all kinds of great publications on there. So just go to learningstore.edu and just sort of
browse
around in there, because you're going to find a lot. And Lisa, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure to see you too.
And we'll have her back, and we'll do this again with her. Really appreciate Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, for being with us. Just to let you know, coming up on Monday, we'll have some personal computing tips and the top 10 websites of the month with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.